Let Sing and Swing.
Evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in Manila.
Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowther, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines. Episode 15, Surrender and Suffrage. Previously on Forbidden Diary.
Jerry, look who's standing on the table in the center of the court. It's Mukibu.
Jesus Christ. They made him an officer.
Where's Mr. Nagatomi?
He's sitting down at a desk at the end of the room.
Those so-and-sos are robbing them!
How long were you living in the hills?
Since the Japanese invaded.
The Japanese are going around the country burning villages and torturing people for information.
Miss McKim says Hayakawa's afraid of Sergeant Fukihara.
And now, Episode 15.
March 15, 1943. Jerry told me the most startling headline of the month so far. Jim Bozeman and Arthur were conscripted to hunt down Americans hiding in the mountains. The two were called into the guardhouse by an intelligence man from town, where a smooth, casual proposition was put to them. Either they help the Japanese hunt down an American family hiding in the mountains and persuade them to surrender, or the Japanese will find and kill them. With the lull in guerrilla activity and recent capture of Mr. and Mrs. Greer, the Japanese think it is time for all Americans to surrender. After their capture, the Greers were interned here. As they were driven through the gate, Mrs. Greer recognized Jerry. What a story they had to tell.
Well, now we know what a hunted animal feels like.
Where'd they catch you?
Up north in Bontoc Province. We'd been living in a swell place up on Mount Data until we were betrayed by a native.
Was there a bounty on you?
Yes, but I don't think it was all about money.
No, the Japanese are threatening to destroy villages if anyone is accused of helping Americans.
And they mean it.
The pressure's terrific to turn Americans in.
Yeah, I've heard pretty horrible stories about the Japanese burning villages. What happened after you were caught?
Some Japanese soldiers tied me to a tree and burned down our house.
I was allowed to grab a few of our belongings, and then they just sent us walking for, what, 6 days?
I think it was five. Then we spent 21 days sleeping on a guardhouse floor for supposedly hiding guns for the guerrillas.
When we drove through the gates here, I thought I was in heaven.
I'd imagine that after what the Greers have been through, even hell would be heaven. Now the Japanese want to hunt down more Americans.
They want you to do what, Arthur?
You heard right, Jerry. They want us to act as their representatives.
Sounds more like a posse to me.
Well, they want the Kessler family alive so they can put the screws to the father. He supposedly has maps and intelligence the Japanese want.
Why'd they pick you and Jim Bozeman to chase him down?
Kessler worked with us at the lumber mill. We're old friends.
So you're the bait?
In a nutshell, yeah. We're supposed to tell Kessler that if he surrenders, he and his family will be interned here, no questions asked. But you know how that's gonna go.
Yeah.
They'll put him in jail the minute they catch him, Jerry. I have to lie to a friend.
Kessler will know you're being strong-armed.
But he'll also know that if he doesn't surrender, he'll probably be putting me at risk. Boy, those sons of guns know how to twist the knife.
Yeah, they got a real flair for it. Mrs. Greer said that when they were captured, the soldiers went through her clothes and took suit tops and pajama bottoms. You know, just for spite.
We're going to get extra privileges for participating in this thing. You know how that'll stick in people's craws around here.
Well, I won't hold it against you.
Yeah, but everyone else will. And see it now. Man, the Japanese have every angle figured, don't they?
March 17, 1943. Arthur and Jim Bozeman left camp with about a dozen Filipino policemen to find Kessler. Some say it could mean torture and death for him and the end of our contact with the outside. Others, grasping for anything positive, trust the enemy's promises in a game of war where all is fair. Even lies. March 20, 1943. The Kessler posse returned to camp empty-handed. Before anyone could ask Arthur what happened, he walked straight up to his family's room in the women's barracks to see Enid.
Oh, thank God you're back, Arthur. Did you find the Kesslers?
No.
Well, that's a blessing, I suppose. I hate to think of what would have happened to them.
It was a goose chase, Enid. First they had us going to Baguio, then they sent us up to Kapanga. And when we got there, every villager knew we were coming.
That's the good old bamboo telegraph for you.
Yep. The one thing the villagers didn't get right was thinking that Japanese had come along with us.
They just let you go on your own?
Yeah.
Why?
Probably because they thought we'd get more information. I don't know. The whole setup was half-baked.
Did you get any information?
No. No one knew Kessler or his whereabouts. Or at least that's what they all said.
Yet everyone knew that you were looking for him.
Yep. I'm telling you, the Igorots are loyal. When they saw we were just Filipinos and Americans, they fed us like kings.
With all of the food shortages?
No, not up there. It's all farmland. Everywhere we went, we got 3 eggs a day.
Did you bring us some food back?
Only what's in our stomachs.
Well, that's a shame. Did you hear any news?
Everyone in camp's going to give us the third degree, but there's nothing new to tell. The villagers mostly talked about what happened in Bataan.
Is it as bad as we've heard?
Yes. They kept saying that the Filipino soldiers' spirits were strong and that they had stuck it out until the Japanese cut off their water and ordered them to surrender. But a lot of them didn't and hid in the mountains.
I hope they're better off there.
Anyone who avoided Bataan is better off, honey. The villagers said dysentery and malaria killed most of the soldiers who surrendered. They said that 5,000 or 6,000 died in one day.
Dear Lord.
They carried the sick out to a field and left them in the sun. If someone recovered, he crawled out of himself, but the rest were left to die.
Oh, Arthur.
When the Japanese finally let the American doctors in prison look at the boys, it was too late.
Those poor young men.
You know, I think Leon Nang had it right when he said way back when we were interned in Camp Hay, that Japan's biggest crime is complete and total neglect.
He's probably right. So you just tramped around from village to village getting fed?
Pretty much. When the villagers strongly implied that Kessler was long gone, we took it easy and enjoyed the trip.
Well, next time you go on a manhunt, Arthur, take me and your daughter along. We'd love to get 3 eggs a day.
Don't tell anyone, but I think I actually gained a couple of pounds.
March 21, 1943. A typed notice left a few days ago on the bulletin board perfectly describes the state of women in this camp.
In memoriam, deceased, the spirit of liberty as expressed in women's suffrage. If the women's committee, being duly elected by the women of the camp, is only functioning through the forbearance of the general committee, then why not bring us women's suffrage that we women may have a voice in choosing our general committee? Signed, the Women's Committee.
March 23, 1943. June has a boyfriend. I knew it would happen, but I'm dumbstruck. He made her a beautiful leather bracelet with her name carved on a small aluminum link. June is growing up. Last night, she and I talked about the universe, God, and how it all started, including the Garden of Eden, Christ, and great men. She wanted to know how one knew a great man.
Do you think there's anyone great in here, Mummy?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to think about that one, June.
Well, you are.
What?
Great. You saw the war coming before anyone else.
Oh, Junie, I'm sure others figured it out before me.
I don't care. I still think you're great.
There's nothing like having one's daughter so confident and trusting as one struggles hand in hand with her through the morass of war, learning together at the same school. March 25, 1943. The rolls of toilet paper came in. 66 sheets apiece. Oh, but I lost a safety pin, which is like gold these days. March 29, 1943. An armored truck drove in from Bayumbang with a Mr. and Mrs. Mool and their three children, all under six, one a baby born in the mountains. All five have malaria. He looked haunted, pale, hollow-eyed, with great tears in his shirt. We gave them food and a place to lie down.
March 30th, 1943. Memo from the Women's Committee. We wish to bring before the all-male General Committee the question of universal suffrage and a joint General Committee of both men and women to govern the camp.
March 31st, 1943, General Committee Minutes. The motion that universal suffrage be adopted for camp in the election of members of the General Committee was lost in voting. The election of the General Committee will continue in present form.
Well, I suppose I shouldn't be surprised that the General Committee denied women their voting rights. But I'm ashamed to say that in this day and age, over two decades after the ratification of the 19th Amendment, they voted unanimously. There's a full moon this evening, and Mrs. Birch broke a bottle over her husband's head and beat her child twice. She also delivered a long tirade to Mrs. Bell, who simply suggested to Mrs. Birch that she was tired after a hard day's work and shouldn't punish a child in such weariness. April 1st, 1943. Six Brent School students left camp to join their families in Manila as adults, no longer children. Three students remain behind, with no word from their parents. Jerry told me that I am much easier to live with right now, and I say he is immeasurably so, which is part of the reason. The other part is that I keep a lot to myself. April 4th, 1943. Jim delivered an amusing commentary in the newsletter today.
Camp Holmes Daily News. Men's fashions, considerably more original and practical than those displayed in Esquire magazine, are being created atop the hills as members of the wood crew seek to reduce washing to a minimum. Loincloths and G-strings, once exclusively worn by Igorots in this area, are extremely popular, varying from plain to a vivid-hued number made of native cloth. Most impressive is the gentleman, rumored to have clerical connections, who stalks magnificently about, bearded like a prophet of old, wearing a felt campaign hat, loincloth, sandals, and not much else.
April 11, 1943. It's Jerry's 52nd birthday, so at breakfast together, we opened a precious can of Scrapple to eat with scrambled eggs, our first in weeks. We all kissed Daddy warmly. A big event in concentration, and more dangerous than it sounds. Nita sent a bag with "Happy Birthday, Mr. Crowder" tucked in it.
Anong iluluto mo para kay Mr. Crowder maliban sa inihaw na manok, Nida? What are you going to make, Mr. Crowder, besides the roast chicken, Nida?
I think I'll make cupcakes this year, Auntie. And I'll send some chocolate and a can of butter. Maybe a papaya, if I can find one.
Oh, he'll like that.
I hope so.
Did you hear about Mr. Nagatomi?
No.
It's all over town. He's in jail.
Serves him right.
No, Nida. It's really bad. The Japanese have him in leg irons and an iron bar across his back.
What did they catch him doing?
Taking money from prisoners at Camp Hay last year and keeping a bunch of bank accounts with stolen money in them. The Japanese couldn't find all of the money. They think his cousin and some officer named Lieutenant Mukibo have the rest.
That Lieutenant Mukibo is a bad one.
Do you know him?
Only what Ismael tells me. More coffee?
Don't mind if I do.
It's the second coffee grounds from this morning. But I have a little bit condensed milk.
I'd like that. You've been looking tired and worried, Sobrinita. Is something troubling you? You know you can tell me anything.
Ismael's thinking about helping the guerrillas. I knew he was going to end up doing it. I think he's already involved.
What makes you say that?
He's talking about working at the mine. And the other day, I found a bunch of...
April 12, 1943. Guess what? While Arthur was at Benguet Mine getting medicine and supplies, he learned from the Nipponese themselves that Lieutenant Mukibo is back in Japan, being court-martialed for looting and his conduct in Baguio. We don't know much else, except he will get no mercy from his own. More Americans living in the mountains are arriving in camp. In addition to the Greers and the Mools, the Griffith family has joined us, along with a fellow named Wick. Normally, we're anxious to talk with new arrivals, but have become worn out with fury and disturbance from hearing stories about the Imperial Army's abuses
and the war's effect on children.
Shh. They'll hear you talking about them.
Well, I think shaving their heads was the right thing to do.
Those poor children couldn't help it.
Of course they couldn't, but we sure don't want lice in the barracks.
No, but still, all those lovely curls. The little things look so forlorn, especially with their mother in the hospital and all.
Well, the father is very attentive.
Are y'all talking about the Mool family?
Yes.
Mr. Mool should be in the hospital. He's as sick as his wife, you know.
What actually happened to them?
Mr. Mool said they were living just fine on the outside until about 4 months ago when the Japanese started hunting them down.
Why?
I don't know. They probably ginned something up about them. Mr. Mool said that every time they moved, they lost more of their possessions, till they were down to nothing. They'd moved 18 times in 1 month.
Well, he told my husband that 3 Filipinos were shot because they wouldn't tell the Japanese where they were hiding. 2 of them died, but the 3rd man managed to crawl back and warn them that the Japanese were coming.
Those brave men.
Well, then you see, the family got malaria. When they were caught, they were so sick they were barely able to crawl to feed their children.
I don't know how they made it here alive with 3 young children.
She had to have had that baby up in the mountains. Can you imagine giving birth in the woods and running for your life from the Japanese with two young children and a newborn?
Mr. Mole said it took 6 days to get here after they were captured.
I believe that.
Is that what happened to you, Mrs. Griffith?
We were held 2 weeks before they let us come here. After we were caught, the Japanese made us send for our household belongings. But we'd already given everything to our Igorot friends, so they took our jewelry. Even my wedding band. Then they tied my husband up.
How'd you get caught, Wick? Did someone sell you out?
Nope. I managed to run into Japanese soldiers all by myself. I'd been warned they were coming and was getting away along a riverbank with two Igorot friends when they came up from behind us and started shooting. I tossed my gun before we were caught, but a soldier found it and asked potent questions about the Japanese ammunition belt I was wearing. I told him I'd purchased it from a Filipino as a baton souvenir.
Didn't buy your story, huh?
Hell no. They tossed me in jail for 21 days and gave me the works twice.
What's the works?
Beatings and the water cure. They didn't feed us, but they did let the villagers send in food. Thank God.
I hear the water cure is pretty rough.
Only if you mind being forced to drink unimaginable amounts of water and someone prodding your stomach with a bayonet. If they kick or jump on you, you're a goner. Right, Mr. Mool?
Yeah, that's what I hear. If there's a hint of guerrilla activity, the Japanese will round up people off the street.
He's right. I saw him drag 25 men and women off to jail for no reason.
Women too?
Yeah, that's right.
Jeez.
They're terrorizing villagers nonstop.
The lowlanders are treated so bad that a lot of them don't care anymore and will risk anything to fight the Japanese.
What are they fighting with?
Any weapons they can get their hands on. Even though they're more pro-Filipino than American, the natives sure helped me. I owe my life to them.
Yep, me too.
How's your wife doing in the hospital, Mr. Mole?
Okay. She wants to get out of there because the kids are here, but she's not going anywhere for a while.
April 19, 1943. Poor Marge Mool has had a rough road. Her children have dysentery. She has malaria. And now we hear that her husband Bill has polio and is in isolation at our camp hospital. But our doctors say that polio is not as contagious as commonly thought, so there's no reason for undue apprehension. Takes me back to 1907 when I had polio. The leg aches that can never be described. Delirium. Braces, casts, and treatments. I pray to God my children don't have to go through it. April 20, 1943. Phil has reached greater heights since his invention of the banana machine last month. Since then, he's carved two front teeth from animal bone for the camp dentist to fit into Delphine's denture. Now everyone's lining up to get their dentures fixed. His peanut crusher invention consists of two large pieces of wood that slide back and forth, not quite against each other, crushing the peanuts fed from the top. The nuts and shells drop down to a shelf below and then are sorted manually. One of our doctors is using the peanut shells to chemically make alkali for soap. Nearest and dearest to me is Phil's beautiful, infinitesimal riveting skills that he uses to repair June's frequently broken glasses. April 22, 1943. The General Committee and camp doctors met to discuss a curious request from the Japanese military authorities.
Okay, and we're all supposed to sign this thing?
Yep. The Japanese think it'll convince people living in the mountains to turn themselves in.
So let me get this straight. They want us to testify in a letter that we're being treated fairly and our health is good?
Oh, so that's what the little meeting at the guardhouse with Mr. Nakano is all about.
You got it. And why those Japanese officers were so interested in the camp hospital during the inspection yesterday.
Who is this Mr. Nakano?
He's the guy who gave us the piano. I think he's got more power than Mr. Hayakawa right now.
Wait, I thought Sergeant Fukuhara was top dog.
For the moment.
Hey, where is Hayakawa these days?
Where else? Hiding out. Sergeant Fukuhara got him spooked. He's even avoiding Miss McKim.
He thinks she's somehow going to betray him to the officers.
Miss McKim?
Yeah, well, like I was saying, Nakano lined up our doctors in the guardhouse to tell us that our dysentery problems are not because of overcrowding, but the poor quality of our health care.
They're just trying to cover up what they've done.
Or haven't.
Well, when Dr. Lee mentioned that malnutrition is making us susceptible to illness, Nakano declared that we're not sick, just neurotic. And if we had all done what we should have, there would be no dysentery.
Mr. Nakano may have a point about intervention, Dr. Dean. I take no pleasure in saying I told you so, but if we'd continued our sanitary regimen and collecting samples, we probably
so
wouldn't
So you'd
have
also
had...
agree with, and I quote the letter... The internees' health care is good and they receive...
That's not what I'm saying here. I'm fully aware that this letter is political, but we must look at ourselves objectively.
I questioned Mr. Nakano about that statement, and he says it's true, according to Japanese standards.
And things must be pretty grim there.
Well, Mr. Nakano's straight off the boat from Japan and knows the war stringencies there.
I don't care if the Joker sailed... peddled over here in the Emperor's rickshaw. The fact remains that people here are medically compromised because of malnutrition.
Look, all of this is a moot point. The Japanese aren't asking us to sign this thing. They're telling us. If you don't want to sign it, then quit the General Committee.
So, any of y'all want to resign? Okay, on to other business. Next item. The woman who was passing notes outside of camp was...
What about her? We yanked her privileges and put her on work detail for 2 weeks.
Well, the Japanese thought we were too lenient and are threatening to take matters into their own hands.
Christ.
I think the best tactic is to keep pressing high command about a camp judicial code so they aren't looking over our shoulders all the time.
You know, this might be a propitious moment to ask again.
Maybe tell them we'll sign their letter if we can govern ourselves. They're doing it in other camps.
Where?
Manila.
It's not that much of a gambit, but why not?
Might as well get something for our John Hancocks. Gentlemen?
Yeah, I second the motion.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
The ayes have it. I'll run it by the powers that be. Now, if we don't have any other business, I call to close the meeting.
Arthur... We also need to talk about the Women's Committee.
What about them?
Have you been asleep, man? They want the right to vote.
Haven't we already gone over this twice in the last month?
Oh, yes, but it's not settled. The women took a poll of the entire camp, and a majority agrees the women should be allowed to vote. 181 to 168 in favor. Surely, the General Committee can see the irony of denying people their voting rights in a concentration camp.
Nope, not really. It'll be a disaster.
Well, you can think what you like, but the women aren't going to take no for an answer.
April 26, 1943. The Japanese gave the General Committee permission to write a camp judicial code. But the committee didn't even consider Jerry, the only graduate lawyer in here, to write it. I'm sure it's because of the case of canned milk that we donated back at Camp Hay, when we discovered that the milk was going into people's coffee instead of children's cups. Jerry tried to stop the graft and stealing. In return, he was defeated in the elections and snubbed by those who wanted to stay in power and grab the privileges. Then, when Jerry asked for a tin of our own milk returned, we were given a flat, cold no. It was bad enough to be hungry and our own children getting no benefit from the milk. But to see our own food taken and eaten by some of our people? Oh, that was torture indeed. So, now a dentist is taking over the camp's new judicial branches that consist of police, jail, justice of the peace, and court of appeals. Mr. Hayakawa is sick with stomach trouble, and Mr. Nakano is so ill they must take a picture of his lungs. Not only do we wear them out, but their own factions tear them asunder. Word has it that a military man is going to replace them, but nothing is definite as yet. Mr. Hayakawa told Miss McKim that the officer High Command has in mind spent 11 years in America and warned her that he considers us to be military prisoners, so we'll be very strict. I'm so confused, Miss McKim. So who's taking over for Mr. Hayakawa?
It's not Sergeant Fukihara. I think it's going to be a Lieutenant Kira.
Lieutenant Kira?
Yes, I think so. I had a chance to talk with him when I was greeting other Japanese officers.
Oh, what's he like?
Well, Lieutenant Kira's English is very good. To be honest with you, our first meeting was a bit uncomfortable.
Oh? How so?
Well, he watched me very intently while I was chatting with the other officers. I mean, noticeably so. And then he walked right up to all of us and demanded to know why I'd lived in Japan and what I did there. I answered him as politely as I could and commented that he must have lived in America. That was a mistake, because he got a suspicious look on his face and demanded why I wanted to know.
Do you think he was accusing you of being a spy or something?
No. Well, at least I don't think so. I tried to compliment him and said, because your accent is so good. And that just made it worse because he snapped back at me that he'd have to change his accent. I've never been treated with such suspicion. I guess I'm a spy now.
They think every missionary is a spy.
May 8, 1943. Women have been given the right to vote. The decision came out of nowhere. The cynical among us say it is because the General Committee thinks women will vote for the members they want elected. Or maybe our voter poll and petitions had something to do with it? I don't know. All I can say is the men who voted against us were fools to think that they could maintain pre-suffrage days. Huh. Like it or not, we must all face change, as I am daily reminded in here, watching June and Beatty slip away from their childhood. June will turn 14 next month, and Beatty is 12. Beatty confided shyly to me that he has a girlfriend, an Alice in Wonderland blonde. He's also starting to sign his schoolwork Fred instead of Beatty. I suppose he wants a voice and self-determination like the rest of us in here.
This concludes episode 15. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowder, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines.